listening to Inclusive AF with Jackie Clayton and Katie Van Horn.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Inclusive AF podcast. This is Jackie Clayton.
And this is Katie Van Horn. And we are here on this fine Friday. Friday afternoon, folks. Friday afternoon. Thank you, Jesus. It's been a week, people. It's been a week. And we got lots to talk about with this guest we have today. So without further ado, we are going to introduce our one of our favorites, who also is a podcaster. So Zach, you want to go ahead and tell everyone who you are, all the good stuff?
Yo, what's going on, y'all? It's Zach, non-overliving corporate. You know what it is? You know what I'm saying? I do this. My name is Zach. No, I'm playing, y'all.
I needed that so bad.
Oh my gosh.
I'm gonna start doing that.
You got to. You gotta just kind of get a little jolt of differentiation on the podcast. Let people know as a guest in the room. Zach and I'm based out of Houston, Texas. I'm a bunch of different things: father, husband, son, brother, you know what I'm saying? Entrepreneur, tech executive. I just be moving around. I'm just outside.
Awesome.
Table shaker, agitator, innovator.
We like table shakers and agitators.
All the things.
We might be those ourselves. So
amen.
Well, we are so glad you're here. We actually have been trying to get this on the books. I know we had to move it a few times, but glad we actually are having this conversation. And so I want to start off with just tell us about the podcast. Tell us a little bit about, you know, what you all do on the Living Corporate podcast. You all know you have two fans sitting here with you, Zach, so just be prepared.
Okay, no.
A little fangirling here.
Sure thing. Well, first of all, I'm flattered that y'all listen to Living Corporate. It's interesting, like Living Corporate started as a single podcast, and the vision was for it to be like a monthly podcast by the people that I started it with, and then people drop off. You know, consistency is a hard thing. That's probably another problem for another day. But Point is that I always had a dream that Living Corporate would be like a network, right? And that like Living Corporate itself would air multiple times a week, but there would be other podcasts and other pieces of media that really, again, created a network of media that centers and amplifies Black and Brown people at work, right? And so I guess backing up a little bit, my family. So both sides of my family came from Mississippi. Both sets of my grandparents were sharecroppers, picking cotton. And on my mom's side of the family, I'm the first man to start and graduate from a four-year university. My cousin, Chris, is the first man to graduate from college in our family, period. I'm the first man to start and graduate from a four-year university. And then on my dad's side of the family, I'm a second generation reader, meaning like my dad taught my grandfather how to read, right? And still, like, my grandfather is not the best reader. Like my dad and my uncles help him with his contracts. He got into real estate later in life. And so anyway, all of that to say is when I graduated from the University of Houston, I didn't have like this organic network of like neighbors and cousins and uncles to like get me a dope job or like talk to me how to navigate these white majority spaces. I just learned on my own. And I came into the corporate world in the HR function, which is majority white women. Very passive aggressive, very toxic, very harmful. Still in therapy, actually. Oh, side note, yo, go to therapy. It's cool. Okay, like, therapy is great. Like, you should go to it. It's a good thing. All that being said, I looked up and I was like, man, like, it would be great if I had I was blessed to run into a couple of people that looked like me to give me little nuggets of wisdom. But everybody doesn't have that, and my profile isn't that rare. Straight Black man from the South. First generation professional, blah, 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 blah. Like, there's millions of people like me in America. So like, what would it look like to democratize, flatten access to these conversations to really navigate these white supremacist majority spaces in a really just, again, free and accessible way? And that's where Living Corporate came from. So again, now I'm back to what I said at the beginning. Started as a single podcast and we've expanded. So we now have several podcasts. We have over 10,000 listeners a week on Living Corporate, the Living Corporate podcast alone. We have web shows and blogs. We've interviewed now over, we've had over 1,000 pods, over 100 web shows, over 60 blogs, some white papers. We've done some incredible campaigns with Pfizer and LiveRamp and Accenture and other brands, all to just center and amplify Black people at work.
I love it. I was going to tell you, that's why I started listening to it, because, you know, I'm in the startup spaces. So I'm the only, and I've been at places where everybody was the only, to be fair. Mm-hmm. Like, all of us are like, have a different story. And so, but like you said, I knew I wasn't the only. And it's not just about, I think we saw, you know, it's a historical week this week, and seeing Ketanji Brown Jackson, but then people are like, oh, is that how they treat like Black women at work? And it's like, y'all didn't know that? This is not, yes. This didn't, it was not invented this week.
No.
Right? And so it was one of those things where you know how you feel and you know why you're feeling that way. And you're trying to be protective. You want to talk to other people who understand those shared experiences. Mm-hmm. And so thank you for doing that and opening that up. And I think it's amazing. I've seen the growth has been amazing, and seeing the people and the various hosts and people that, and it's funny because like, then you start stalking people, you know, they don't know me. I know them. I can't, I have to prepare now that we're going out of the house again. I have to send, you know, okay, Vonda, you don't know me. I know you.
Yes, like, shout out to Vonda Page.
If I see you in public, I'll give you a hug. Don't run. This is what I look like.
So funny.
Well, yes. You know, right?
Yes, like, yes, 100%.
And it was like, also for me, like with Vonda Page, it's like, the break room, especially starting in like, you know, going back, knowing that we didn't have, I've worked at home for 10 years, so I've always looked for like water cooler conversations. Mm-hmm. But then you feel like you have this group of people that you can listen, that understand, and it feels safe. Sometimes with the blog, with even with our blog and other blogs, this is the only place where people feel safe. And I know right. You've probably seen that. Yeah. I'd love to know more about, just because it was such a historical week, and I know we were talking about women and professional women recently throughout Living Corporate as well, I wanted to get your feedback on what you've been seeing, the response like within the last 2 days, besides really happy. But some people are like, you know, breathing. Some people are like, the impact has generational trauma, of course, when I'm watching in that process. So I wanted to get some feedback from you on that.
I mean, first of all, it's just such a, there's so many things you could talk about, right? So like, and I'll start by saying, I'm not going to be comprehensive in my analysis. I'll speak to the limited perspective I do have. You know, I'll say that, you know, I get conflicted. Like when I see events where they're like, we're historically white spaces where we've been actively excluded from, finally get an opportunity to get there and the celebration that goes with that. And I try to be empathetic to the reality of I benefit from the patriarchy as a Black man. So like, I recognize that, you know, I do suffer under the mantle of white supremacy and patriarchy, but I also benefit from patriarchy still as a man, even though I don't benefit in the same degrees as white or more white adjacent men. Right. So it's anyway, that's a separate conversation. The point is that like, I struggle because I'm looking at it, I'm like, okay, this is great. Like, this is great, like full stop. It is great that we have representation of someone, a Black woman in a space who isn't anti-Black, right? Who doesn't hate us, right? Like, you know, we had Thurgood Marshall. I was like, yo, he's like, you know, you like read Thurgood right. Marshall. It's like a bastion of like Black, just like represent, like you talk about someone representing the quote unquote Black community. It's like, yo, I will take like, if I have like, you know, if you're doing like a pickup game, it's like, I'm gonna take Thurgood Marshall. Like you're gonna pick him early. You're gonna pick him. And then you're gonna pick MLK. He's up there. And so then to backdoor with, you know, with Clarence Thomas, is like, damn, okay.
Maybe
this whole like, you know, desegregation thing wasn't the best idea. Maybe you shouldn't, maybe we shouldn't be up here. Like, you make us look awful. Like, it's crazy. You taking us, like, you're taking us back, not Will Smith slapping Chris Rock. You're literally taking us back with the legislation that you champion. So again, Paul Robeson. Paul Robeson is another person I would take in my pickup if I, you know, like, he's okay. Anyway, the point is, it's great. It's also, I'm conflicted because I'm like, dang, I mean, one, it's such a hyper exclusive space. So it's just like, dang, right? It's just like, okay. And my wife and I've talked about it, right? I have a daughter, she's 2 years old. And, you know, there are people out here, like, you know, they don't really necessarily like, they're like, it's great that we have a Black a sister up there. It's great that she isn't like a white supremacist. It's great that, like, you know, she has a, like, she's of course, like, she arguably might be the most qualified judge ever. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, it's like, okay, man, maybe she can create and be the, like, the Jackie Robinson to really help open the door for, like, I'm going to say radical judge, because I want to see radical Black liberation theology holding judges in the Supreme Court. I do. Like, that's what I would love to see, right? And so it's like, man, you know, it's, and so I like, that's where I'm conflicted. It's like, I want to celebrate, I want to, like, I also want to recognize, like, what it really is in the context of, like, the political power she holds, because of when you think about the balance of the Supreme Court. And then I'll say the other thing to your point is, yeah, like, I watched the hearings. It was triggering to watch, like, her being talked over and demeaned by people, and her intelligence being questioned by people who don't know what they're doing and don't know what they're talking about. I mean, look, I'm a Black man in tech. Like, I experience this every single day. Like, you know, she said something, she'll say something for 20 minutes, you come back and you ask her a question, it feels like gaslighting. Like, did you not hear what she said? She already answered your dumbass question 4 or 5 times ago. Had you listened? It's insulting. Like, shut up, right? If you would just listen. And so that's triggering. Like, I'm low-key triggering myself right now. I think about, like, the idea of, like, so often in those hearings, you heard people just ask questions to confirm their own biases. They weren't asking questions to actually learn or have a conversation or progress anything. They had a whole little game they wanted to play with you by asking you these stupid, inane, asinine, asa-10, asa-11 questions. You know what I mean? And so, like, I just
ask 11. I want that on a shirt.
You say, like, kind of like the last couple of days, I think the last, as I kind of wrap this up, I'll just say my hope is that, to your point, people really grasp that, like, there are Ketanji Brown Jacksons everywhere we work, and like, we have an opportunity to listen to them, amplify them, respect them, and also just shut the hell up sometimes. You ain't got to talk all the time. You know what I mean? Be quiet. Let them talk. And so, you know, that's my take.
I love that. I think that along with that, what I get really emotional. And just so you know, I'm in Phoenix. Katie is in a different room. I'm at Katie's house this week. And I was, like, bawling, and I could not stop bawling. And I was like, I think I might start crying again. And the big thing that brought to the table really is part of that voice, those voices, and knowing that the voice is in the room and how this is the beginning, but then also the reality of what she took on. Like, I think I've always tried to make spaces. You try to make spaces. We know a lot of people that try to make spaces for Black and Brown people, but we also know what it's like to be the first and the only, and that you're not just accepting the job. You're accepting the threats, you're accepting the hate. This is a lifetime appointment. And I know that this is a big thing, but part of the reason why I wanted to talk about it was because it's a job.
It's a job.
It's a job. And these are their coworkers.
Yes.
And you talk about dealing with conflict.
Yeah.
There's conflict going in.
100%. You know, and it's so interesting because, like, that's often the experience of Black folks who enter in these high ranking positions. They often inherit a mess, right? Like, you know, when you compare, like, high ranking Black folks who come into positions compared to, like, you know, white folks in positions, and, like, I think about corporate America, if there's a black person who's coming in as the CEO, like that company is in trouble. They're inheriting a mess. Like, you know, there's a bunch of tension and extra nonsense that they're going to have to put up with and do. The white folks typically they're set up for success. They have a portfolio book business. They got the relationships already handed out. They've been groomed for this for a while. Black folks have to kind of claw and fight and climb and justify to get to inherit a mess, right?
You're making me think of McDonald's. Remember McDonald's when the guy come in and it was an absolute mess. There was no way you were going to win. There's no way.
You might be surprised to know that not all serial killers are straight cisgender white men, and the victims of true crime are not a monolith either. She's Wendy and I'm Beth, and together we host Fruit Loop's Serial Killers of Color, a true crime podcast.
Together we take deep dives into the true crime stories about marginalized and minoritized perps and victims that often go untold.
We also provide the context and nuance that these stories deserve. At Fruit Loops, we're serving up true crime with a side of history, society, culture, and some fun.
Listen to Fruit Loop Serial Killers of Color on Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah.
Okay, continue. Sorry.
No. There's no. No. Please don't apologize. No. That's really it. It's just. And you're right. It's a job. And it's interesting. I was reading an article about this was some years ago, but it was like in the Atlantic, and they were just talking about like the dynamics of the Supreme Court, and it's like, a lot of people don't realize, like, in a lot of ways, that Supreme Court job, it has the same politics and stuff as any other job, right? Like the need to settle conflict and relationships. And, you know, if we know there's a big decision coming up and, you know, there's someone who's going to be the deciding vote or the deciding decision, have to be cool with them. And, you know, there's in groups and out groups. There's all of that. Like, it's a job. So I don't have anything to say besides I agree, Jackie, I agree.
And just in case people didn't know, when I was talking about McDonald's, some people may not know this, between 2012 and 2015, Don Thompson was served as the first black president and CEO of McDonald's, 3 years. Mm-hmm. I don't know, you know, anyway, wanted to bring that up because that's the same thing. You are inheriting a mess, and we've seen it, and we keep seeing it, even in black spaces. You can see it like at Essence Magazine, you know, it's like, oh, you know what? Let's try something new.
Right.
Because what we're doing is not working. Right. And then it is inheriting a mess.
It's a mess. It's a mess.
But I think some people don't recognize, like, it was a mess and it was triggering, but it was also like Tuesday.
Right. And that's the other thing. Like, to your point, right, I think, like, black folks are at the bottom. So, like, you know, dysfunction and oppression, harm, confusion, all the other words, like folks being, I don't know, like hypocrisy, dealing with, you know, having to guard yourself from exploitation. These are like just common things. These things that go hand in hand with the black experience, not because of your blackness, but because of white supremacy. Right.
Right.
And so, like, you know, you're right. It is just a Tuesday. Like, I mean, I'm thinking about like my days recently. I'm having, you know, it's part of just being alive. Like, it's like, how much do you have to guard and protect yourself and like document things and have all the conversation you need to have and, you know, to survive, right? That's just, and that's, again, like, that's a function of white supremacy. And yeah, it's often just a Tuesday or any other day that end in Y.
Yep. I think, go ahead, Katie. No, I was just gonna say, I think that is something that people don't recognize, that we do have to have those challenges. And I always think it's funny when people are coming out in the space of how people react to either what I posted or something that I said, and, you know, like, oh, is it really like that? And you're like, you know, it's just funny because it's like, I've been black my whole life.
Right.
So I don't know what you're talking about, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I remember one time somebody had contacted me and they were like, oh, aren't you mad about that panel? It's all white men on that panel. I was like, I'm used to it. Is it bothering you? This is my life. is it bothering you? Okay, do something about it. No, I didn't notice. I was like, nope, I didn't notice at all.
No.
Right? So, but I think that's why it goes back to why it's important to have those spaces and to have these conversations. And I do think it was a masterclass of the things that we have to deal with every day. There is some interesting things. I'll put them in the show notes. They did it. I think it was the New York Times pulled like 5 black women from Harvard and just got their reactions. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing. It's amazing to watch. But it does. I think part of the reason I was brought to tears was just knowing that when you see it like that space, you can never say. When you grow up black, and this is for all of the listeners who haven't grown up black, when you grow up black, that you know your role in your space, you know your lane. People put you in these lanes, and so you say, I can be this, but I can't be that. I can do this, but I can't do that. Right. So we talk about representation matters, but I think people who are not black don't understand that you know that you can't be a Supreme Court justice. Mm-hmm. Right? Like it was the same thing. Like, I'm not going to be able to be president, or I'm not going to be able to be this or that. And so part of the tears comes from there will always be that space. And let's say 30, 40 years to all these other little girls that can say, oh, that is possible. Where, you know, we've always thought those things were impossible. And you look at Ketanji and the, like, where is she? Because we're on a first name basis because we're best friends. And when you see her, you know, we have been part of several transformations. We're nowhere near, but we've lived to see things that we thought would never happen. And so I love to say, you know, my ancestors' wildest dreams, the things that are going on, probably seems like a blip, right? But there's like, it is the ancestors' wildest dreams.
You know, it's, you know, and for me, it's like, I remember I teared up, but I definitely got upset. I remember like just specifically during Ted Cruz's questioning. And then I definitely like, remember I had to just like, I stopped watching. There was this clip where he said something like, our baby's racist or something. And she said, Senator, she kind of paused and like looked up.
Big heavy sigh.
Big heavy sigh. It was just like, what is this? Right? Like there's so much in that sigh of just like what are we actually doing? Like what kind of game is this? Like what is this? Like what are we like what is like and so that's where for me I certainly felt, and again, like there are so many moments of that where I just felt very much so seen and just felt like a person in arms with her, and just the experience of having to justify your qualifications amongst people who are incompetent, who like, and not to sound like elitist or snobby, but like are not in any position to question her, you know?
No, fully. And I should mention, Zach and I are both Texans.
Yes.
You're outside. Are you in Houston proper or outside?
I'm in Houston.
So Katie, being in Arizona, we laugh all the time because, you know, there's much drama within our states. Sure. And I saw Ted Cruz, and that's the other part where you're like, you know, I can like really be mad at him up there, but he's coming home. Like, ugh. That's how I felt when I saw him. I was like, oh my God, you again. When is this going to be done?
He is the worst. He is the worst. But yeah.
So I'm going to switch gears a bit. Who has been your, I won't say favorite, because that might not be nice. Who has been your most memorable recent podcast guest?
Okay, most recent. Okay, so the extra qualifier or filter on most recent.
Most recent memorable.
Most recent memorable.
Right,
like it's tough like straight up, like you think about like all the, you know, all of the guests, like as long, I am trying to think about like who I want to say in this moment. You know what, I'll say that I had a conversation recently, and it hasn't been published yet, but with Michelle Kim, who is She's an author. She's also the founder of Awaken Co. An incredible person. And what I appreciate so often, you know, I come into these conversations oftentimes really exhausted, like mentally and spiritually, because I just, again, like I am also like in these, I'm also in these systems that I talk about, that drain me and by some degree exploit me. And so it's encouraging when I can have conversations that feel gentle, that feel gracious to me and caring to me. Like that, those always like, I always walk away just feeling like, dang, that really, I really appreciated that. Like, it was like, it's an extended part of my therapy. And so I'll say that, you know, that's the one that I will say is most memorable, who that is very recent. As I think about, you know, our conversation, we actually covered a lot of ground, but we talked a lot about just like internalized oppression. We talked about like just this current climate of diversity, equity, inclusion. And we talked about what does meaningful impact look like to really create equity in the workplace. And so it was just a dope discussion. And I really like, I'm a Michelle fan. Like, I like her as a person.
Yes, I do as well. She is amazing. No, that I'm excited to hear that one then. She's just great. And every time I've heard her speak, obviously her book was phenomenal. And I love the way you describe that. Just like you come out of the conversation, you like, oh, I'm smarter, I'm better, I feel good, everything's good. Like, that's just, those are the type of people you want to chat with a lot. What's coming up for you? What's on your radar? What's coming up for you that we should know about, that our listeners should know about?
Yeah, you know what? I think we're getting close. So I think I can talk about it a little bit more. And when is this going live? When is it getting published?
3-ish weeks from now.
Oh, great. Okay, cool. So
you're not going to release any proprietary information. actually, tomorrow, Zach. Tomorrow. What stock should we be buying? Let us know.
Oh, my God. So I'm excited about the fact that Living Corporate is, we're actually, you know, and this has been going on for a while. Like, we've been talking about, okay, we have this library of content, right? Like, I say this not like looking to puff up my chest or pick a fight, but I will box if I need to, is I don't know there's another platform that has as deep a catalog of content focused on centering and amplifying historically excluded groups that we do. And that has so many brands talking on the record about their own challenges and how what we need to be doing, right, to like really do something different and better. And so the question I've continued to ask myself and ask our team is like, what does it look like to just optimize this content, right? Like, I don't know if everyone knows that we have a conversation with Michael C. Bush, who's the CEO of Great Place to Work, and we talked about the role that data is going to play in the next decade around DEI. I don't know if everyone knows we had a conversation with Nicole Hannah-Jones and talked about like her own journey and attacks from all these incompetent white men. I don't know if people know about these conversations we've had over the past 4 years. And like, you know, you talk about we've been doing this for 4 years and we drop content damn near every day across a myriad of media channels. Mm-hmm. In our network. And so I don't think it's even fair to expect everyone to catch everything because there's so much stuff. Mm-hmm. And so anyway, I've just been continually challenging like myself and our team to think about what does it look like to like bring that content to the forefront, because so much of this content is evergreen. Like, it just hasn't really aged poorly or aged at all. And so what I'm excited about, what's coming up, what's next for me is, and what's next for Living Corporate is, we're actually going through a complete website redesign, where you're going to log on to Living Corporate. You're going to be encouraged to create a profile where you select content and topics that you're really interested in. And then you're going to get a personalized curated experience where we push content to you from our library. And I'm really excited about that. And we're going to have a job board where we work with brands to post their jobs on our job board to encourage and really push those opportunities to Black and Brown folks, historically excluded folks. And so those, like that, that work, and just the work I've been doing with our web design studio to like really bring this to life, I'm really excited about that. And I'm so excited about what that's going to mean for our audience, because like, I think there's going to be people who've listened to Living Corporate for years and who are going to be like, yo, I didn't even catch this episode. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, I have been kind of scrolling through, and I one of your earlier interviews with Wit was with Aubrey Blanche.
Oh yeah.
Who, you know, a friend of ours, but it looks like you just interviewed her again very recently.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had not listened to that one. So I'm putting that on my list, but it's a good point. Yeah. I mean, and she's someone also that, you know, you can sit for hours and just learn as you're just listening on. Go tell us all the things.
And that's what I mean. And it's like, and here's the thing, like, it's interesting, like, cause podcasts, y'all know the game is like, so many people, like they judge their podcasts or their data by like how many listeners they get per episode. Right. Or like, oh, they drop an episode a week. And so it's like, oh, hey, we got so many listeners, like dope downloads, whatever, this week. And like, you know, typically on your average podcast, your podcast is not living for years. Like you post it that week and then you post the next episode and that's it. Like for Living Corporate though, like I'm looking at our data, you know, people are still downloading content from like years ago, right?
Yes.
Like, so people are treating Living Corporate like a learning library. And so it's like, okay, how do we optimize and maximize that? And so to your point, Katie, like in the future, you're gonna go to Living Corporate's website, you're gonna be, oh snap, and you're gonna be able to click a button and add it to your playlist on your profile, right? So you can listen to it and check it out later. Like, so it's just gonna be a much more interactive and communal experience. So I'm really excited about it. Yes, shout out to Aubrey. I'm a huge fan. She comes on and talks about, you know, her job and the role of data and DEI. And yes, I love how she keeps it real. She's a bit of a provocateur, table shaker like us. Mm-hmm. And I love that.
I love that too. I mean, I have gotten to the point where I like LinkedIn, I've spent most of my time there since my last job transition. So I get all of my access, like all of my access to everything is there. But you're right. And this is something that we talk about in my workspace where like when you're helping people, a lot of times they can see one episode, right? They get excited, but it leads to something else. And so I'm glad that you're saying about signing up and having that like curated experience, because if you are interested in this, these are some other episodes, blog posts, whatever, that you might want to be, you might be interested in. And I also think that it's good to have those multiple voices. I know for like Katie and I are not afraid to have difficult conversations, but I know some people are looking for specifically, they want to know how to navigate within the space because they want to do something and don't know what to do. And so they you know, latch on to one episode versus the other.
Right. And I think that's the other thing too, is like, you know, when you talk about even our content, now I'm gonna say this, Living Corporate really doesn't create content like that. We literally, I literally will go on Living Corporate and I'll say things to make sure that you're not comfortable. Like, so like, as an example, like I've said, you know, that white folks made crack and unconscious bias in the same lab, right? Like, it's like, I'll say things like on purpose to make sure that you're never hyper comfortable, because we literally make content to that centers and amplifies historically excluded people. We're not out here trying to make content to keep white people comfortable. But to that end, we also do have content that's focused on growing as an ally. Really, what does an ally really mean? Decentering yourself as a majority person, power sharing, you know, sponsorship versus mentorship, and all those different things. So we've curated our content in a way for you to, you know, get an experience that you might be looking for, while also recognizing that we don't pull punches in the content that we create.
How much do you understand the future of finance? I'm Jim Roos, a top 10 banking influencer and host of the podcast Banking Transformed, where we dive deeply into the rapidly evolving world of banking and financial technology. Join me as I interview industry experts, thought leaders, and innovators as they unravel the latest banking trends, disruptions, and game-changing technologies reshaping the world of finance. Redefine your understanding of the banking ecosystem. Subscribe now to Banking Transformed, available wherever you get your podcasts, and now available on YouTube.
Well, and I don't think I mean comfortable when I say that. I'm just saying it sticks out, right?
100%. No, yeah, absolutely. I got you.
And so if this is interesting, then this should be interesting. And yeah. This should be interesting.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah.
100%. And I think sometimes being here, I do think sometimes we have those real conversations. And so some people are like, well, how do you have those real conversations? Mm. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think for me, it's like, I don't like, life is so short. Like I have a child, like I said, I have a 2-year-old, and like, you know, there's nothing that just reminds you that you're going to die than like having a kid. And so like, my time is valuable. Like, is why I say that. Like, I value my time. It's like, I'm not going to be up here talking about some little hoity-toity bullshit with you. Like, if we're going to have a conversation about my experience and like how things need to improve and be better, then like, we're going to have that conversation. And if we're not going to talk about it in an authentic way, or in a way that honors my own values and who I am as a person, then we're just not going to have the conversation. Like, what's the point? Like, you right. can go anywhere. You can go, like, right. that's the whole, the other thing about it is like, this is so noisy right now. Like, since George Floyd was murdered in 20, there's so many people out there trying to have the conversation, expand the dialogue or whatever the case is. It's like, yo, you can go if like, I'm comfortable knowing that Living Corporate's content is not going to be for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so you're free to go listen to like some really pleasant conversations spoken like at an NPR tone like this. Like the doctor of sociology at Cambridge. Like, you can go do that. Like, that's not us. And I'm not going to waste my time doing that.
You're right. You're right. And that's, I will say, I think that's part of the narrative that we've seen that space going up too. A lot of people trying to have difficult conversations, but then we've also seen a lot of pieces of self-care, how to advocate for yourself, or having understanding like racial trauma, understanding different things and various products where other people didn't recognize it. Because one of the things that happened to me, and I think, this was before George Floyd, because we're in the HR space, right? So I'm trying to explain to somebody, we were talking about, they were asking me, you know, about specifically about work. And then all of a sudden I was like, wait, in the middle of a live show, I was like, I'm not talking anymore to explain how white people can deal with black people. Like this no. is the last time. And she goes, because she was like, do you have anything to say? And it hit me. I was like, no, I just want to talk to the black and brown people that are listening right now. Like, right. you're enough. And if anybody's having this conversation and feel like this is necessary to move forward, you need to leave.
Right. 100%. I mean, it's so funny because like I've gone on different platforms and I've said this before, is like, you know, white people, we don't need your advice. Like, we need your things. Like, you know, we don't like, and it was like, well, what do you mean? It's like, I need your things. Like, I need your money. I need your access. I need your social networks. I don't actually need you to tell me how to be better. Like that whole narrative is like white yeah. supremacist, right? It's like, oh man, like you, it's so insidious. Cause like so many of these DEI narratives, corporate and otherwise, are like, hey, white people, let me teach you how to be an ally so you can go fix black people. And it's right. like, no, that's not what it actually it is. Like black people don't need to be fixed. Like right. we've been navigating and surviving in this world and thriving for hundreds of years, right? In spite of blatant abuse, blatant exploitation, explicit oppression, and non-explicit oppression, disparate impact all over the place, right? Legislative impact, all kinds of things that have been happening to us. So we don't actually need that. It's insulting and it's racist, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And so like, what we do need is for white folks to just share your stuff. The stuff that you shouldn't even have. Give it back and share it. You know what I'm saying?
Like, I do.
My daughter was over, my daughter was here. My I'm daughter sorry. Was no, it's okay. Is it me? Did I do
something? No. No.
Okay.
And maybe it'll be after hours. I know Katie knows what
it's true.
Where my brain's going.
No, you're speaking truth, and that's why we're chuckling, because it's like, yeah, exactly that.
Well, so my quick story is like, so my daughter, again, she's two, she has cousins, and two of them came over. They're both boys, super cute, super fun, and they are boys. They be jumping around, they playing on stuff. And Emery right now is an only child, so she shares a daycare, but at home she's kind of like, well, yo, this is my. And it was, and so they came over, and there's tons of toys. Like, there's toys, like, we have so many toys. And she just couldn't get over seeing her cousins play with toys that she's only used to be playing with, right? She just couldn't deal with it. So at a certain point, it was like she was trying to take the toys. And so they were like, okay, because they know how to share, because they deal with each other all day, every day. So they hand Emery the toys. So now Emery has a bunch of toys in her hand, just like walking around with a bunch of toys. And I'm like, Emery, you can't even play with all these toys. Like, give the block back, give the train back, let them play, right? Now, and like, again, a silly analogy, but like, that's how it feels sometimes. Like, you see white folks, like, they just have so much stuff. And it's like, you wouldn't even miss it if it was gone. Like, stop. And, you know, and it's like, like with my daughter, it's like, it's not that you need to teach. No, they know how to play with the toys. Just let them play with it. Right. And that's the thing, is like, that's how it feels sometimes, like on this playground of life or equity or whatever. I don't know where I'm at with this metaphor at this point, but it's just like, yeah, just let us play. Like, leave us alone. Right. Give us the things about the way. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
It just made me think, because I have two adults, right. One's 19, one's 21.
Yeah.
And I, you know, hot take, I told my kids not to share.
Yeah.
You can have it when they're done.
Mm-hmm.
Don't steal my kids' joy because you want something and now I'm supposed to give it to you and drop it because you asked.
That's fair.
I will give it to you when I'm ready to give it to you because it's mine.
Period. And that's
fair. You do not have to give it away. Just because of that same mindset, granted, now that they're 21, maybe I pushed it a little too much. But
no, there's value in that.
You know, with three roommates, but the big thing is always being able to find your voice, to be able to advocate for yourself and speak, have your voice and be clear on how you're feeling, because people are confused. Sharing is very confusing concept.
It is a confusing concept. I think my pain point is, it's not that they were, and like, just to close this up, is they weren't asking for toys that Emery was playing with. They were trying to play with toys that were like Emery wasn't even thinking about, right?
Yes.
And I'm like, okay, Emery, you weren't even touching the toy. This is an issue of you sharing. Just back up. Like, come on, you were playing with like five different toys. There's 80 different toys over here. They're gonna choose a couple. Like, you know what I mean? So anyway,
I do. It makes me laugh, and especially makes me laugh. I think it's adorable listening to you talk about Emery. I think that's adorable and sweet. And like I said, I have two adults, and so. We're going to do a recap. We'll do a recap.
Oh, man. I look forward to that.
It is amazing watching them go through all this. My oldest is about to go take a job in New York City. I think I say it on every podcast now because they're going to be moving in July. So,
oh, congratulations.
And it's like, oh, my gosh. I think we kind of did it. Like, I think, okay.
Yeah.
Now what are we going to do? I don't know. Learn how to quilt or something.
Oh, man. You know, it's interesting you say that. Like, I drop Emery off at daycare and she'll, you know, she just walks off. Like, and she walk, like, well, we'll walk inside and then she'll walk into the little room.
Mm-hmm.
And it just makes me sad. I'm like, dang, we're going to be doing this for like eventually, yeah. Like, you're going to walk and you're going to be like gone, yeah. You know? So.
But they're never really gone, P.S. We'll have that conversation later.
I'm honestly, I welcome that at this point because it's sad. Yeah. So.
Okay, my friend.
All right. So this is the part of the podcast where we talk about what is the one thing you want folks to take away, to make note of, to hear from this podcast.
Mm. Yo, white. Next,
so make sure you're going.
Yeah.
Sorry, Zach, back to you.
White people, give me your things. So that's what I want you to take away.
Okay. All right. White people giving Zach the things. Perfect.
Thanks. Jackie. Save some for me. Save some things for me. The other thing that I want.
Sharing is caring. Maybe this is caring. This is where the sharing comes in between the two of you.
I want somebody to, I want people to say, I want to say something that I've said in the past. Like, we've seen this narrative, bring your whole self to work. Bringing my whole self isn't safe. And it makes me go back to thinking about having that narrative of what diversity looks like. It's only going to be, I need to be able to be safe to be myself. It's not about you. I'm going through something too, through this process. I've been Black my whole life. Before all of this happened, before people decided to teach these classes, there's different situations that we're going through, and you have to be there to nurture everyone at work. And until you can nurture everyone at work, don't ask people to bring their whole self, because you're not ready. You're not prepared, and you're creating more toxic environments. That's what that got me thinking, because that, I mean, that is the worst piece. And that's why I decided to like get back in this work, because you touch more people to be able to help move it forward when you have a real narrative. I think that was like 34 things, but that was the thing that stood out for me, just that thought process.
37 things. I'm going to go back to something you mentioned about, you know, white people listening to the Living Corporate podcast, as I do consider myself white some days. Although right now we're in Arizona getting tanned. So there's that. So being uncomfortable is okay. Mm-hmm. And it, like, I think that's the piece that white people shy away from, that discomfort. And they shy away from the listening to voices that are not Eurocentric, patriarchy, whatever you want to call it. And we need to start listening to those voices, and we need to be okay with being uncomfortable. I think that's a piece that like just continues to resonate as we're having these conversations, is we've caused discomfort for so many, and we're allowed to be uncomfortable too. So yeah, Zach, thank you very much for joining us. We truly appreciate it. For the audience, if you are not subscribed to the Living Corporate podcast, go do that right now and go listen to all the things. This is Katie Van Horn.
And this is Jackie Clayton.
And this is the Inclusive AF podcast. Bye.
Bye.
Do you love news about LinkedIn, Indeed, Google, and just about every other recruitment tech company out there?
Hell yeah. I'm Chad.
I'm Cheese.
We're the Chad and Cheese Podcast.
All the latest recruiting news and insights are on our show.
Dripping in snark and attitude.
Subscribe today wherever you listen to your podcasts.
We out.